Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm going to be chatting with CPK.
Yes, but like a lot of people don't know, I was playing Gears of War 1 at like a pro level. So I was like traveling to events. I was playing on a team when I was like 17.
I was going to ask, if you were born 10 years earlier, do you think you'd have tried to be a pro player?
I don't know what, like, let's say I'm like 7-8 years younger. I'd definitely have been like trying to compete in Valorant or something, for sure.
There's some which you'll get accepted for, some you'll get denied.
Yeah.
How does that affect you when you get denied from an SMP?
I have no right to be in every SMP, but I definitely got comfortable in being in every SMP that I wanted to be in. And then MCC6, Wilbur asked if I could go on his team. He asked Scott if I could team with him. And the team was me, Wilbur, Filzer, and Technoblade.
Oh, wow.
And at this point, I was like, I just knew Technoblade as this guy who was like immensely good at the game.
But what's it like as a YouTuber when things start to go down in numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because obviously like every YouTuber would always give the same advice. If they're asked a question, like, don't focus on the numbers, just have fun. They're bangers now. And I know they are. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, at least I know, even if it's not doing well, I know that I've made a video that I'm like, this is a good video. But yeah, it's rough. It's definitely like, this whole job is like, how good is your mental?
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know CPK beyond the game. Look at that. Look down the lens. Well, on that note, we can get started.
Let's do it.
CPK.
Yes.
I was going to call you Callum, but it feels very odd. I've never really spoken to you as Callum.
No, I don't think many people have now at this point.
We're very similar in that sense, aren't we? We've got an online name and then a real life name that gets used by very few.
I mean, I don't think I've ever called you by your name. I literally tell, like, even when I was like to my girlfriend, I was like, oh, I'm off on Gregan's podcast. Like, yeah, I'm good to see Gregan.
Yeah. I think a few times as well, when I've been around you, I've introduced myself as Mike to people, and then you've come over and gone, oh, Gregan. And they're like, huh?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think the hilarious thing is I just assumed because your name was Gregan that your name would be Greg.
That's common.
Which I'm not surprised it's common, to be fair. I was just like, yeah, Gregan. Greg, and then I don't know what, Anderson or something. Sure, Gregan.
I mean, if I did that with my actual name, I'd be called Micro. Which
That's
is
quite, good.
Quite a cool name.
Micro is quite good. Yeah.
But anyway, we met at parties.
Yes.
I feel like that's how you know a lot of people. You go to so many events. In fact, we were just speaking beforehand. There's an event coming up near both of us where I was like, oh, I assume you're going to be there. And you're like, yeah, assume you're going
to
be there.
But that was one I had to go out of my way for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird because it seems like the most appropriate thing that I would go to because it's related to gaming. And I've had to like fish an invite out. So I'm at events I shouldn't be at, and I get to go to events that I potentially should be at by asking.
Yeah, well, I first met you, but I didn't actually speak to you properly. It was at a Valorant viewing party.
Yes.
And then the next time I properly spoke to you and introduced myself was at, I think it was Becky's birthday, right?
Yeah, and that was when I was just like, oh,
yeah,
we met. And that was when I found out your gaming history.
Yeah, and I sort of went up to you. I was like, I used to be in the Nox crew, and you're obviously MCC guy. You've been in, was it like 24 of the 29 MCCs now?
Something like that.
And you do all things MCC, YouTube channel. You've been in all of these Minecraft S&Ps over the last few years, and we just had the nerdiest conversation in the middle of a bar.
We pulled up YouTube. You pulled up a YouTube video to show that, I think it's, did it say like made by Gregan in the corner or something?
Yeah, like, as next if, like, to Epic Landlord.
Like your proof of like, I wasn't a nuts guy. I was like, no, you weren't. I assumed you were joking. He's like, look at this. I pulled up a YouTube video. I was like, made by Gregan. He's like, me.
Yeah,
it's me.
Minecraft history. We both started with Minecraft. Yeah. Mine was with building and map making with an Ox crew.
Yeah, mine is not.
Ooh. Yours was, so you started like 10 years ago, is it?
God, yeah.
So 10 years ago, you start a YouTube channel. How did it all begin? Like, what were you thinking when you started it?
So I guess to give some like background on it, I mean, like, I guess like a lot of people, I grew up gaming. I grew up playing games. The first thing I ever played was my great granddad's Atari. 60% of people watching this are going to be Googling Ataris now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was literally like a little console with a stick and it had a button on top, and that was it. And the game I used to play was like, I'm probably going to butcher it now. I don't even know the name, but it was like you were a cowboy on the back of a horse, and the whole game was just, there were like bulls running and you had to lasso them and you got points.
And it felt amazing.
That was the whole game, right? And I was like, oh, this is sick. Like, it's such a great pastime. And then from there, I just started like playing games a lot. So I had like N64, like Dreamcast. Like, I think it was like a family friend had a Sega Saturn, and I was like just playing games at any given moment. And then as I got older, I got into competitive gaming first, which is like something I waffle about on stream all the time, but people are like, oh, here he goes again, old man talking about history. I'm like, yes. But like a lot of people don't know that before, I guess, there were really pro players on console sports, because there wasn't many at the time. I was playing Gears of War 1 at like a pro level. So I was like traveling to events. I was playing on a team when I was like 17. And what that meant was I had to play the game with gore content turned off, because there was some sort of technicality where they were like, now it's a 15, not an 18 rated game, because I couldn't have competed technically.
I see.
I'm not sure how legal that was, but I'm also not sure how surveillanced the events were either, because it was like, so the first Insomnia I ever went to was Insomnia 17.
Jeez.
Which is crazy now, because they're about to do 70.
Yeah.
And I went to 17 to compete in Gears of War when it was at Newbury Racecourse. And that was it. It was just like one stand of the race course.
And they were kind of like what Epic Lands are now. They're just a lot of people playing games in a big hall.
That's it. But when you say a lot of people playing games, it was like 32 Xboxes set up, like 8 for each game, basically. And you just have like 2 teams playing each other, screaming across monitors at each other. And from there, I started making some friends in like the Gears of War community who were like making like top 5 plays videos of the week and stuff. And I was just like, I mean, I'm not really doing much else. I was like, I could give it a go. And yeah, I started uploading. I actually started as an indie horror channel way, way, way back. And then my audience crowdfunded me a PC, because all I could play was like dodgy Unreal Engine games where I could like crank the settings to like minimal, everything to like the lowest settings possible, and play it at like 24 frames or something. And I think people got fed up of it. And I was like at college and working a part-time job whilst doing YouTube, like daily videos. And I think they were just like, oh my God, like, let's just chip in. Let's just get him one. So super grateful, because that then meant I bought Minecraft in beta and my PC couldn't run it. So then when I got a new PC, I was like, oh wait, I was like, maybe I could try it now. And I guess they say the rest is history, I suppose, because it sort of became my main beacon of content. And I'm like, now I'm still playing it.
Yeah, it's interesting, because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, based off of your MCC love and the fact that you love the competitive side of Minecraft, and you know, you're into your Valorant now, into the esports side of it, I was going to ask, if you were born 10 years earlier, do you think you'd have tried to be a pro player? And I guess you kind of highlighted that with your journey early on.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually really stupid, because sometimes I get like, frustrated is not the right word, but I'm like, if I was like, I don't know what, like, let's say I'm like 7-8 years younger, I'd definitely have been like trying to compete in Valorant or something, for sure. Mm. I mean, no one's getting into the scene at 30. Like, no. It's too late. I'm going to settle into about Ascendant rank this season and just be like, it's like being a pro player for me. Yeah. So, but I miss like the competitive side of things. And when I got into MCC, obviously at the start, it wasn't like competitive. Like, it was fully made for fun. And then it was around like MCC 5 and 6, they added some like really big competitive people. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be the guy who sucks. So, and it opened my eyes to this side of Minecraft that I didn't know existed, like the whole like PvP community and this like, you know, I think like the Skyblock side of it as well, where it's all like very grindy doing stuff. And I was like, oh, I kind of wish I'd done some of this as well now. But again, like once you've built your audience somewhere, like I built my audience on SMPs. So now like YouTube for me is like SMPs or it doesn't work really, which is like, you know, it's frustrating a little bit, but I'm also at a point now where I've sort of moved fully to Twitch where there's a bit of freedom. So it takes the edge off a little bit.
I kind of wish I got into SMPs when I was first into Minecraft, because I sort of went straight to the Nox Crew building side, started on offline single players and then built up my building skills and then went that route. But I used to love multiplayer servers and what you do essentially and have done. Throughout that journey, you did various different single, what's it, survival multiplayer?
Yeah, survival
means.
Multiplayer.
Survival multiplayer. Which one is the one that stands out to you as the highlight of all of those servers?
Okay, it's interesting because like I think about this and I get asked this a lot, and especially at like Q&As and stuff like that, I always have like a set answer, and that is I was on an SMP called Crazy Craft, and that was like the SMP that like me and all my friends who I made like on the internet, so like LD Shadow Lady. I think actually Scott got added later because I don't think we knew Scott properly yet. But it was like me, Lizzie, Joel, Ollie, like, you know, the whole old school SMP gang made this SMP on Crazy Craft, which was already a mod pack made by someone else. And there was another group running it at the same time as us. And I always say that one because that was the one that let me quit my job and like go full-time content creation. And you know, are there other SMPs that I played in afterwards that were arguably better and more fun? Probably, yeah. But like, it's hard to ever say there's one that's going to be better than that when like I literally got my whole career from that SMP. So it's hard to say that there's a better one than that, I don't think.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about the process of getting on the SMPs. There's some which you'll get accepted for, some you'll get denied.
Yeah.
How does that affect you when you get denied from an SMP?
Okay, this is a good question, actually, because I bring this up occasionally now, is when it first started, like we all came together and was like, let's make SMPs. Like there's no need to put a group name on it. A lot of the old, like old school creators had like groups of creators and they'd be like, oh, we're this group. Like, you know, there was like the pack and
Mindcrack.
Yeah, Mindcrack, you know, like
Hermitcraft,
the cube people, like, they all sort of like, let's be a group and let's name the group. We always sort of was like, let's be a group, but there's no pressure on it being a group name. And we don't have to be fully affiliated with each other at all times. But we did sort of agree like, hey, let's run an SMP. And then when it's done, we'll have a little bit of time off and then we'll crank out another SMP, right? You know, so once it's like run its natural course. So there was probably 6 years where like our SMPs didn't change. It was like the same people, maybe add like one or two new people in or stuff like that. And then I think it was about when I switched to Twitch, to be fair, and I started like taking the MCC side more seriously. I sort of just ended up on, I guess maybe an accidental, like no invitation list of SMPs. So like I've had this conversation on stream where I'm like, the reason I don't upload to YouTube anymore is because I'm not in any SMPs that are based around YouTube. Like I got added to the Dream SMP, but like that was a Twitch stream thing. And like I've done loads of SMPs on stream, but they're not there for, like, YouTube content creation is so different to Twitch content creation. Like, YouTube stuff, we'd, like, message each other and be like, hey, I'm going to prank you, and then I'm going to do it on this day, so then the video's going to go out on this day, you can react to it the next day, and you sort of generate that cycle of refreshing content where it's like, oh, I've seen him set the prank up, now I want to go watch the other video where you see the prank happen, and then I want to go back to see if he's reacted to the prank happening.
Mm.
And, like, Twitch isn't as much like that. Like, it's more like a, we're going to make an SMP, it's going to last a week. And then we're going to be like, okay, cool, done, nice. So it is like, it's not frustrating because like I have no right to be in every SMP, but I definitely got comfortable in being in every SMP that I wanted to be in. So then when I stopped being in them, I was like, oh man, I really miss it. Like I miss having that like thing where I can get up at like 9 a.m. and be like, oh, I'm going to crank out like an episode or start working on something, you know?
Mm.
So I was in one about a year and a half ago, I think it was now, based on like the Origins mod where you get like all these different like character traits and stuff. And that was super fun. But it was like quite a short series and I was away a lot through it. So I got 7 episodes done and it ended while I was away. So like I came back and everyone's like, oh, why no finale? And I'm like, I mean, it's gone. It's done. I don't know what to
close down.
You I don't know what to do. So like, the server stayed up for a while, but I'm like, everyone else was done. Like, I don't want to be that guy who's like, I'm gonna finish up, but no one else is here.
Yeah, cool. I mean, the whole SMP thing, I think it's one of the craziest things in gaming, that people can just create these new worlds and every single time it's exciting and refreshing because the what could happen is limitless, right? Like there's so many different ways you could go with it. You can go down the creativity route, you can go down the like grindy. I was always, when I was on Minecraft servers, I was quite a grindy, like let me optimize everything.
Yeah.
We had a little group where we did, I can't remember the mod pack. I think it was Feed the Beast.
Oh, yeah.
Like default modded Minecraft.
Super grindy, though.
And I just went full grindy, created a factory, and got so powerful in it that everyone else was just annoyed that I had, like, the perfect armor. I could fly everywhere, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then building-wise, I just built a factory for function. I didn't build, like, for prettiness. And that's the way I like to play it.
Yeah.
So I guess my question for you is, what's your favorite way to play Minecraft? What's your greatest achievement in Minecraft?
I think this is funny because like the way I describe my self playing is like, even when I'd been playing it for like 5-6 years, like the most basic function would surprise me because I just learned nothing about the game. So like, I always described myself as like the lovable idiot where like I'd be fun and funny, but I wouldn't really know what was going on. Like I was in Crazy Craft, which is one of the most intense mod packs like of all time. The server crashed like 4 times a day because like it spawns Pac-Mans into the world who just eat the blocks, and it was absolutely chaotic. I had no idea what was happening, but a mod pack like that gave me so much room for like doing silly pranks and like being a menace, basically, that I sort of would say I became like a prankster character without meaning to. That was just where I found my enjoyment. And like even now to this point, like I can't remember what it was. It was something recently. I made like an automatic farm for something and I was like, that's so cool. I bone mealed moss and it makes all these like flowers grow. And I was like, that's sick. I was like, oh, is that because this is modded? And they're like, no, like it's just a vanilla feature. I'm like, oh, I mean, I don't know. I haven't played like vanilla Minecraft in so long because like it's really bad, but they release these updates and they're like, look at this. We've just added a new biome and this new mob. And I'm like, but modding has ruined the game for me. Because I'm like, well, yeah, but we've had mods with 64 biomes in for 6 years.
And like the animals, every animal you could imagine has been in the game. And even stuff that doesn't exist in real life.
Yeah, and like even when they do the like mob votes, like as soon as they did the mob votes for stuff, like within like 3 days, someone was like, yeah, modded it. Here it is. Here's all the ones, because they're not going to put them all in. Here they are. Here's the functions that they said they were going to have, so I've given it to them. Enjoy. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
cool. So it does take all their like thing out for me. And like when they do these mob votes now, I find it really hard to get excited because I'm like, I don't know. Like I've done it. I've played it.
Yeah, well, I've just started playing Minecraft again in the recent update. Mm-hmm. And the cave update is incredible.
Yeah, that was a big overhaul.
And I didn't realize how much had changed until I went into the game. And I think they had one of the OG modders into the team
who
then created that. The generation of the areas, and like you're in these deep caves and it feels like you're in the Nether. So it's like the craziness of the game has only got more and more as each update comes out. But as you mentioned, the modding scene has meant that the game has felt like a whole new game every single mod pack anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely made me like very numb. I mean, you know, I'm looking into like mod pack stuff at the minute just out of curiosity because I haven't looked in years really. And like some of them now are just like, yeah, it's got 400 mods in. And every like 100 days of Minecraft time, you advance to a new time period. And I'm like, mad. I'm like, how do you even, I mean, obviously that's not something you would put in the normal game. But yeah, I do think that the caves and cliffs was the last one that really like actually was like, oh, that's actually massive. Cause they raised the height limit as well.
Yeah.
Like the height and the low limit is like way more now.
Yeah. I was digging down to start strip mining the diamonds and was like, why is there no bedrock?
They've scrapped that. They've scrapped it. I actually remember when that first happened, the day that update came out into like the snapshots, which is like the betas for it. I got this, I was starting to make YouTube shorts. I was like really curious. This was before, just before shorts came out. And everyone was just uploading clips like as shorts, basically. And I made this like channel and I did the world's largest bucket clutch because no one could have done it yet because it just came out. So I just built up to height limit, jumped off, did it. On this random new shorts channel, I got like 5.8 million views. I saw absolutely zero kickback from it, of course. But then the funniest thing was that, like, people still comment on it now being like, you weren't the first. And I'm like, you're seeing it a year and a half late. Like, yeah, if you think I've just done it now,
yeah,
of course I'm not. But then there's all these people as well, like, you could have used an elytra and a rocket to go an extra 100 blocks up. And I'm like, oh. It was just a catchy title, guys. I guess not, probably not the biggest one.
But what they don't realize is they're just making it more...
they're just pushing it.
Pushing
yeah.
the algorithm.
They're pushing
we found that with all of our clips so far. So this podcast has been going now for 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And with the Scott one of the clips did really well and the other one didn't. And mm-hmm. the one which did well was the one where the subtitles accidentally put green instead of green. And most of the comments is people being like, it's not green, it's green. Oh, the subtitle person should get fired. All this kind of stuff. And it's like, you're just making it more...
Yeah, you're just pushing it
in the algorithm.
Further out.
It more clickable. Anyway, I'm sure there's lots of listeners right now who are like, Minecraft, I don't know this stuff. I mean, let's talk about the other stuff that you do. So you said you stream more now.
Yeah.
Because YouTube, SMP, that kind of era of your content was more around the SMP stuff.
Yeah.
Now you're more of a variety Twitch streamer. You know, today you're playing Stardew, you do a bit of Valorant, do a bit of Minecraft. What kind of games do you tend to go for as a variety streamer?
So it's interesting because I remember when I started streaming, my whole purpose was I don't want to play Minecraft on stream because all I do is play Minecraft, right? So I was like, I need that little respite. And it's not because I don't like the game, I do. But, you know, when you upload it, I uploaded daily for 6.5 years and like didn't miss a day basically. And if I did, I'd do 2 videos the next day. So... Mm-hmm. You know, I've done the grind. It's about as grindy as you can get. Like there was a time where we were doing 2 videos a day. And yeah, that's why I had that break away from it and to show like, hey, look, I don't only play Minecraft. So I actually started out as a Valorant streamer. So I was only streaming Valorant in the beta. And then, well, Scott had to ruin it and make MCC up, didn't he? So, and then he was like, oh, do you want to do MCC? And I was supposed to be in the first one, but I got this opportunity to fly out to San Francisco with NVIDIA. For like this opportunity, but they were like, oh, you're only going to be in San Fran for 48 hours and then you're flying you home. It's like a real quick thing. I was like, yeah, cool. I was like, Scott, I'm really sorry. Like this opportunity's come up. I get to the airport, flight's canceled. No flights that day that can get me there. So it's like, oh, it's going to be the next day. And I'm like, I'm not going to fly out for like a day. I'm like, it's the other side of the world. Like I would be on a plane for as much time as I would be in San Francisco. So I had to cancel going, but they'd already filled my spot. So I couldn't be in MCC1. So I started from MCC2 and then I started streaming and stuff. And it was, I think, MCC6. I always forget the numbers now, which is bad because it's like, I'm all things MCC guy. I'm supposed to know them all.
You already knows everything about MCC.
Yeah, but I think it's MCC5 was when, MCC5 was when I teamed with Scott and we won. And that was my first win. And then MCC6, Wilbur asked if I could go on his team. He asked Scott if I could team with him. And the team was me, Wilbur, Filzer, and Technoblade.
Oh, wow.
And at this point, I was like, I just knew Technoblade as this guy who was like immensely good at the game. And that was the start of my like training arc where I was like, I don't want to be the reason. If we don't win, I can't have it be my fault. So I just started like grinding out PvP and stuff. I had no knowledge of it at all. Like I didn't know about crits. I didn't know about timing. I didn't know about anything. And I was just like, I'm going to grind it out. I'm really going to grind it out. And then the practice server came about and I just got better at parkour through that. And then I started like seeing this gap in the market of where there was no MCC dedicated channel outside of Nox Crews having, but you know, they're not a dedicated MCC channel. They have other projects going on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, what if I made a channel and I just did it? So it actually started as MCC Analysis and History, which is a bit of a wordy name. And the videos are doing all right, but the only selling point really was that I was in the event. And it was me talking about it, which is like a unique standpoint. I just took it so seriously. I don't know what came over me. Like, I just got so into like the analytics of stuff that like, even now, like if I'm not in an MCC, I just like watch it. But like an absolute nerd, I'm like keeping track of who's killing who. And I'm like looking at what scores people are getting in the games. And, you know, me and the Orion Sound actually got to commentate one. We cast one because we weren't in it. And we were like, can we cast it? I was like, we won't stream it because, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the people who are in it. So we recorded like a 2.5 hour video of us shoutcasting MCC.
That's amazing.
And it's just the funniest thing because like, I think it was quite good. Like, I think it was all right.
Well, it genuinely could be the angle MCC could have gone was more of a official esportsy style route. Mm-hmm. But it was always just done for the fun of it. You know, Nox Crew had the pre-built system there.
Yeah.
A little bit goofy, all about the user experience to try and make it as fun as possible.
Yeah.
Because originally Nox Crew Game Show was all about the contestants putting their point of view up.
Yeah.
And the actual commentated version of it barely got any views.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool that the angle that they went down was that. But I do feel like there's a space for that esports broadcast style.
Yeah, I also feel like, again, like you said, Nox Crew is definitely all about, like, you know, they want to have a tournament where everyone comes in and has fun. And I think they've openly said, like, they're never going to have a prize pool. And, like, they're likely never going to take a sponsor on because, like, you know, they don't want it to become that, it's like, corporate beast side. And as soon as you add, like, money to it, like, you'd have to take away the random teaming situation and stuff because people would take it so seriously. But I do think there's a gap for like a hyper-competitive Minecraft event somewhere. And like Twitch Rivals have dabbled and the Minecraft MOBA thing they did was really fun. But it's so hard because like I know if they made Minecraft an esport and were like, right, we're gonna do massive events, no one really in MCC would be in it because there's all these like cracked kids who are playing on servers all day. Like I'm good in MCC. I'm horrendous in public servers, like in comparison. So like, I wouldn't even get to play. So I'd love it for the culture of the sport. I would hate knowing that like I'd be sat on the sidelines again being like, ah, so close.
Yeah.
So close.
Then you'd have to become a commentator. It's the only way you can get involved.
Maybe I could coach. If they bring coach yeah. slots. We're taking a halftime break so I can amp them up. Like, use your bow. Mm-hmm. You need to bow them.
Just keeping them level-headed. When I was at MCC 4 at this moment. But so with all things MCC, that is a big part of your current content because as I mentioned when I first met you, we were nerding out over everything because you are genuinely passionate about the game show history and going into MCC, how MCC runs, all the functionality of it.
Yep.
Why? So you said MCC just triggered something in you that you fell in love with. Have you kind of come to terms with what it is about it? Is it that esportsy side of you that you've got from the history linked with the Minecraft stuff, do you think?
Yeah, I think it probably is that. Because for me, like, I love playing in the event and I love competing. And even if, like, you know, there's always going to be times when you're on a team where you're like, well, we're probably not going to win, right? Like, you know, there's always going to be those events. I mean, I do have blind confidence in pretty much every event.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it really hard too, because now when I'm doing team predictions, which I do like every month, there's absolutely my own bias where I'm like, yeah, we could win. Yeah, I suppose in second.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is that. It's that side of like, it's still fun. I'm playing the game I enjoy. You get to be on a team with all your friends. It's an event full of like, massively influential creators, like some that I've like looked up to for ages, some that are new, but like, you know, you see what they're doing in the game and you're like, you know, it's like game respects game, I suppose. You're like, nice. They're absolutely killing it. But just that competitive side of me, like, even if my like team doesn't do well, I have that side where I'm like, I did pretty well, like individually, like I can take my own performance away from like team performances, or like if I did bad individually and I'm like, oh, I've let the team down here. It's more about like that side where I'm like, oh, I don't need to win. I just need to know that like I've competed to the best of my ability. And if I have and we don't win, then like that's what it is. But it's that side. And then, yeah, I don't know, something, because I'm not like an analytics guy really, which is weird because now like all things MCC is like my child.
Mm-hmm.
Like I absolutely love it. And like we've had a team working for us. Like I ended up bringing in like three people added on to me. Two of them have left now, sadly, to pursue like other projects. But so it's me and one dude like running it at the minute. But it's just so fun. Like, I don't know, I just get to waffle about MCC and it's like, you know, outside of Twitch, it's like one of my main incomes now, which is wild. Cause it was a big joke for a long time with Noxite that like I was making more money off MCC than he was, which is hilariously true when, you know, they should be, I mean, I'm sure Island and stuff is going to help with that, but you know, MCC was making a loss, I would assume, because they were paying so much to have a team to make it.
Yeah.
And yes, they're making money from other projects, like the maps they make for the marketplace and, you know, I'm sure other endeavors, but like that event was making a loss. So it is wild. So, you know, I've always been thinking they're very deserving of earning something. So when Island came out, I was just like, oh yeah, when this goes like public and you're going to like give us a load of cosmetic options, like I'm going to be in there. Like
buy
I owe you guys. Yeah,
them,
I owe you guys.
Yeah. I mean, when I was speaking to Stefan about it at first, he was like, well, we're building a brand out of it. And when Noxu Game Show was doing quite well, they made the Noxu Game Show Island a server around it. Didn't get as many people on it as they...
didn't know that.
Yeah, they had... That was one of the first things I was building, was the lobby for that. So yeah, they had this whole server built around Noxu Game Show, and it was amazing. The games were fun. The, you know, it was very well made and everything like that. But it was just really hard to advertise because Noxu Game Show wasn't a big brand. Whereas MCC, like their Twitter account's got 1.7 million followers.
Yeah.
And like all of their tweets get, you know, notification people coming in. So if the fact that they can now have that much following towards that product, huge for them if they do try and monetize it through the server.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go back to the variety side of things. So we ask every guest when they come on here what their top five games of all time are. And because you're a variety streamer, I feel like there's going to be some of those that you play on stream, but there also might be some little secret gems from your history growing up that might come up here. So top five games of all time.
I'm going to go in no specific order because I don't even know how I would organize them.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy VII. Probably a pretty common favorite game for some people, I imagine. But
that's the typical best of the Final Fantasy.
Yeah, series, like the argument is always like, was it seven, eight, or nine? Usually, I think it's a big seven and eight argument. But like seven was just the one I played first. So even if I did enjoy eight, seven got me into it. So yeah, Final Fantasy VII, definitely. Minecraft has to be in there. I mean, I can't have played it for this long without enjoying it. I guess Counter-Strike. That's my most played Steam game. I've got 1,800 hours in Counter-Strike.
Did you see all the news today?
I did. I'm actually have to make a small stint back. Who knows? I never thought I'd come back to Counter-Strike, but...
Well, technically you're not. It's Counter-Strike 2.
True. I just assumed it was the biggest meme, honestly. I thought they were just going to come out and be like, we're joking, by the way. Mm-hmm. Could not believe when they dropped actual information today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I put so much time into that. And like, that was the game like me and my friends would jump on a nighttime, like finish all our work for the day, 10 o'clock, CS time until the sun rose, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Valorant also has to be in there. I mean, Valorant and CSGO are almost interchangeable, I suppose. But Valorant now, CSGO then, but I still play it a bunch. And then Gears of War, I suppose. Because, I mean, not only did I love it, I mean, I have a Gears of War tattoo like on the underside of my arm, like the cog tags, which I got done with Xbox for free as part of a Gears of War campaign. I said 5 years ago, if anyone ever needs to get a tattoo for a campaign, I'll do it. And they're like, we're doing Gears Inc. Everyone can come get free tattoos. I was like, sick, sign me up. So, yeah.
What are any other gaming references in your tattoos, or is it just that one?
Not really gaming, I don't think. I mean... I've got my cat as a Twitch emote on my leg. It's kind of gaming related. I got my cat made into a Twitch emote, and then one day I was just like, it'd be funny if I got it tattooed, wouldn't it? So I got a lot of stupid tattoos.
There's a lot of streamers out there who've got an emote as a tattoo.
Yeah, I got a lot of stupid ones. And like, I mean, I think the Gears one is my only gaming one. This is a Stranger Things tattoo. So I mean, I guess there's like pop culture stuff.
Yeah. So there you go, that's your five then.
I think that is my five, yeah. Gears, CS, Valorant, Minecraft, Final Fantasy.
Yeah. I mean, they're all great games.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about mine recently, and I think Minecraft and Valorant probably would be in there for mine. So we've got a bit of crossover there.
I'm putting respect on my like history of gaming here, because you know, I don't play Gears anymore. Like, I mean, Gears 1 is like 18 years old or something at this point.
Maybe
I imagine
the Lasso game could go in there as well.
True, yeah. Slap that on. Atari Lasso game.
But yeah, we were speaking a bit before we went on the podcast here about Valorant, and you've got involved in a lot of Valorant stuff. You know, you're a Valorant influencer. We get through the tournaments, early access to the new characters.
Yep.
And you get to go along to some of the events as well.
Yep.
Talk to me a bit about being involved in esports now and how different it is to when you were first at the beginning, when you were doing those Insomnias. Was it 17?
Yeah, 17, I think it was, yeah. Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, obviously, first of all, esports has just come so far. Anyone who's been involved in it can see how far it's come. You know, I mean, there's like events for millions of dollars in prize money now. You know, if my team won the Insomnia, we got about 250 quid to split between us, I think. Also, I said I was like a pro player. I was notoriously terrible until like the last event I went to. So I was like pretty much dead last, but we got a buy in the first one. Pretty much dead last, but we got a buy again the one after that. And then my peak placement was fourth place. And that was right as Gears sort of phased out. So I ended on a strong... I ended as a top 20 EU player, technically. The career wasn't great, though. I'm glad there's no, like, wiki page of my, like, earnings or anything.
But then, like, Boaster is our favourite player.
Yeah.
We were speaking about that before. His journey's crazy. He started off as a CSGO player who was mostly there for the memes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, tried to make it in League of Legends as a vlogger and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So go and be in the best team in the world in Valorant. So maybe
it's a good story, isn't it?
Maybe for you're just warming up with your Gears of War career.
That's it.
But you get to go along to these Valorant events, and you were along at VCT last
Istanbul,
year.
Istanbul. Yeah.
How was that?
That was wild because it sort of came about pretty randomly, to be honest. I mean, I sort of the way I even got involved was, I mean, I was playing so much Valorant. Like, it was my main game. Since it's come out, it's been like my go-to free time game. Like, I just jump on Valorant, play a few games. and I actually got in touch, I think through friends who were like, oh, like Marcus, I owe quite a lot to. Like, he put me in touch with people and I got added to the Valorant creators stuff, which was super cool. And then they invited me to this event and I was like, oh, mad. I was like, what is it? And it was like, oh, it's VCT in Istanbul. And I was like, wild. But I don't know anyone in the Valorant community, right? So I actually originally declined. I said, I was like, oh, like, sounds really cool, but like, I didn't want to go to a place I was unfamiliar with no one I knew. And just like, in, I would have loved to have watched it, but I was like, oh, I just don't feel like I'm gonna like go and do it. And then I get off the call and I'm talking to a friend and he's like, oh, yeah, like me and my mate are off to Istanbul. I'm like, you're joking. I was like, that's so sad. So I was like, got back in touch with him like a week later. And I was like, so what are the chances I can still go? And they were like, nah. They're like, no, I can't take you anymore. I was like, really sorry, but we offered your slot to someone. And I was like, fair enough. You know, it is what it is. And then the story is hilarious because the reason I actually got to go in the end was I offered to pay my own way because they were flying us out there and stuff. So I was like, what if I book my own flights? Like, I'll pay myself to go. If you still have the hotel, that'd be great. If not, just tell me where it is and I'll book it myself. And it was sort of like a, let me see what we can do. You know, it was left on a 50-50. I went out with my good friend, Con. And Con was going with his friend, Josh. And we were in Prism nightclub at 3:30 in the morning, and Con took a selfie and messaged like his Valorant contact, and it literally was like, please, 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 can Callum come on the trip? And like, horrendous decision, not a decision that either of us sober would have made, let's put it that way. And I remember we like woke up and like we looked back at it and we were like, that's so embarrassing, why did we do that? But there was a message basically being like, yeah, if he'll cover his own flights, he can come. So booked my own flights and then traveled out. And I actually used to travel to CSGO events. So I went to 3 majors when I was big into Counter-Strike. So I love like the environment that is there. It's just like, you know, thousands of people who all have like one shared passion of esports. So to get to go and do that again in Valorant and like see, I was so curious what Valorant would be like, especially because it was like, you know, post COVID where I'm sure like no events happened for like years.
Mm.
So I was like, have people bounce back from it? Is it going to do well? But the event was hype. Like, it was so much fun. And I'm always a guy that like, when I went to the CSGO events, like my friends would be like, oh, I really want to watch, you know, the Gambit game, or I really want to watch the Fnatic game. I'd be like, oh, I really want to go at 10 a.m. and I'm just going to watch all the games. Like, it doesn't need to be a game that's considered like, oh, it's a really hype game. I'm like, I just want to go watch Val, you know? So we went all day, every day. Watched all the games. I mean, because it was in Istanbul, it was like decent because I think they sort of weighed the times up where it was good for as many people as possible. So the game started at like 3 p.m. in Istanbul, which is like great because it meant that if you perhaps went out and enjoyed yourself the night before, you had that little bit of leeway time where it's like, I can get up at 12 and I've got a little bit of time of recovery where you then chill out, get a bit of work done, you know, look at emails and be like, that's when I get back. And then still get to go to the event and, you know, enjoy Valorant. And I just hope that esports continues to grow into, you know, seeing like 2,000 people at an event is wild. But like, I do think there's this capacity where it is going to get, you know, to the point where the stadium's going to get bigger and bigger. And I hope that I'm still in some way involved. And if not, I guess I'm just going to be copping a lot of tickets to esports events.
Yeah. I mean, the the events now are getting bigger for Valorant, you know, the one that just happened in Brazil, huge arena there. So we'll see them grow for sure. What I get the feeling with you is you're just a gamer through and through. You just love gaming and you love competitive gaming, love Minecraft. I'm interested to know, and this is something we ask everyone as well.
Yeah.
So this isn't just me asking you, what is your greatest ever gaming achievement?
Oh, okay. I've got a couple of fun ones, to be fair. I had 3 Guinness World Records. Two for Minecraft, one for Mario Kart.
Casual, so, just drop those in.
This is how you get a Guinness World Record. You niche the category. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And to be fair, every Minecraft record I had was made for me. So I had them. I didn't keep them very long. So I had fastest time to build a house with a specific set of rules. Fastest time to build a castle with a specific set of rules. And the Mario Kart one was most coins gathered in a 4-person tag game of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Niche. They're all niche. But they were also made for us. So like it was pretty easy to go in. All I had to do was get under us. There's still a time limit. It was never too difficult to set it. And it got me in the Guinness Gamers book for a while. They put me in the one before they stopped making them. There was a picture of me and it just said he lost all his records. Like, I don't know why they did that to me. Like, absolute violation for no reason at all.
It's almost like they planned that from the beginning. Let's give him some really easy records and then let someone else do it afterwards so he can take the mic.
I was at a big point in my career. Like, SMP stuff was really going crazy, but they gave me 8 pages in the Guinness Gamers book. So there was like 4 2-page spreads of me in various outfits talking about building a castle, basically. So it's probably that, or in 2017, 2018, somewhere around there, I did a campaign with Xbox, and that was through like the work I'd done with Minecraft and stuff, where they put me on Piccadilly Circus billboard.
Seen that picture.
I was one of the faces of their like jump in campaign. And for me growing up as like, especially I was like an Xbox dedicated gamer, playing Gears of War for so long and like Xbox party chat era. And, you know, to get to work with them in any capacity was wild. For them to put me as the face of their campaign that was plastered all over billboards in the UK is still, I mean, it's still my pinned tweet. No matter what I achieve, like nothing removes that tweet so far. And if that tweet ever moves, like, no, I've done like a madness in something somewhere. Cause yeah, I think what I'm going to do, if I ever have something that I feel is like, this is the big announcement, I'm going to unpin my tweet, not put another pinned tweet up, but I'm just going to tell everyone that just keep an eye out just in case something's the pinned tweet goes away.
So. Well, I mean, you've done so many crazy things in the 10 years of content creation, more now, right? It's over 10 years. But with 10 years of content creation, there's highs and lows. There's always going to be a point in a YouTuber's career when the views start to go down. And I don't think I've had anyone yet on the podcast. I guess Scott might have been able to answer this, but I haven't had anyone who's been going for long enough that they've been through those ups and downs. You mentioned MCC was amazing for you because that was a nice big up spike recently. But what's it like as a YouTuber when things start to go down in numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because obviously like every YouTuber would always give the same advice. If they're asked a question, like, don't focus on the numbers, just have fun. It's true. But also like, I don't believe that any of them are fully like that. I feel like if you're not focused on the numbers at all, you're probably clear of needing to worry about them, right? So like, even my whole career, like I think the first like 4 years of content creation, like I was making about as much as like I would make from a full-time job. I think there's this like misconception that like all streamers and all YouTubers are just like loaded. And like they make jokes now like on stream about like me like being a millionaire. And I'm like, I could not be further from being a millionaire. Like, you do not understand. Like just like with outgoings and booking stuff and paying for travel and stuff like that, like, you know, it's my outgoings are wild. So whilst I earn a healthy living, I'm absolutely tanking myself by having to go and do things. But you know, everyone has that. And like, I would always experience it in like the SMP dips. Like SMP started coming out for us. We started planning them around like the summer holidays of schools. Cause like, our target audience was sort of, you know, between 13 and 18, because that's just like what the current audience of Minecraft was. It was like, who's watching wacky SMP stuff? And that was the audience. So it was like, oh, cool. If we do our SMPs in the summer, not only is it high viewership, it's also good ad rates in the summer. You know, and it was never like, oh, let's do it here so we make more money. But it was like, let's do where we have the best opportunity for the SMP to grow. So then we'd do it like, you know, maybe like June through September. And then we'd have like October, November, December of nothing and then see if we're going to do something else. And as soon as an SMP finished, I was getting, at my peak, I was probably getting about 100,000 views an episode of this like insert SMP here. If I uploaded any other video, it would get about 20K. So I'm like losing by, you know, a huge amount. Once the SMP was done, I was in limbo. Like I was flailing to try and keep viewership numbers in. And I did it in a horrendous way. I would just like upload videos that I would never dream of uploading now. Like I look back on them and I'm just like, I would download a Minecraft map, play it for 15 minutes, chop it up to be about 12 minutes long and then be like, that's my video, cool. And you know, my thumbnail was a default background of Minecraft with my character on and the Minecraft logo and then just like the name of the map on it. Like real lazy stuff. And like I look back at it now and it's like embarrassing to think that that's the situation where I was like, I craved that like praise for my content and the viewership numbers so much that I was like willing to put out anything to see if something would happen. Whereas like, you know, other friends in that same category as me, like Lizzie's a prime example. Lizzie would do 12 episodes of an SMP, wait a couple months, do another SMP, and she would maintain this, you know, banger average. Whereas like, I didn't feel like I had the security where I could not upload for a while. I felt like I had to upload every day or else like I would be forgotten about. Like I would have no career anymore. And like once you've had a taste of, I got to do so much cool stuff in content creation and my job was hanging out with my friends. Like who doesn't desire something like that? Once I'd had it, like I was so scared of losing it that I was like, well, better just upload something every single day and it'll get me by. Like, you know, if three videos equate to one SMP video, like I'm still getting the views somewhere. And it's a horrendous way to do it. And if, you know, if I could change it, I would, but I can't. And that's why now, like, I'm back to uploading like one video a week on YouTube, but they're like videos I work for like 3 days on and have an editor edit it for 2 days and they're bangers now. And I know they are. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, at least I know, even if it's not doing well, I know that I've made a video that I'm like, this is a good video. Like if people might not see it or they might disagree, but I'm like, for me, I think it's a good video. But yeah, it's rough. It's definitely like this whole job is like, how good is your mental? Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm definitely, as I've gotten older, like I've definitely got way better at managing it now. Like I'm much more laid back. And part of that is like, you know, being signed to Misfits and having a salary, which does take some of the sting off. But you know, it means I can make the content I want to make and it puts me in a much better headspace. And in that headspace, I want to make better content. So it's tough, but you'll get through it. You can always bounce back somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of regular income thing. It's definitely something a lot of people will be craving if they're a content creator. It's the same thing with commentating in esports. You're always just waiting for your next big event. And there's a lot of stuff, especially now with things disappearing. I mean, I'm struggling a little bit with it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always just concerned about when the next paycheck's going to come through.
100%.
So the fact that you've got a little bit more stability, but you never know, like Misfits, nothing against them, could disappear tomorrow. You never know.
I mean, even now, like, you know, I get on so well with them and like, I'm sort of like, I mean, I'm kind of like one of the old heads there. I mean, everyone else on Misfits really is like 20, 21, you know? So like, for me, I mean, they're bringing in a couple of new people at the minute and they're sort of like, sort of, you know, towards the 24 to 27 range. And, you know, but for me, like when I'm going into like work for Misfits and stuff, like I know where I am in the ladder of creators, right? In my head. And like, what I hope is that I bring my value from like having so much experience in it, because like, I'm definitely not the view guy and I'm not being picked up because I'm like, oh, he's popping right now. I know that. And like, it's completely okay to be aware of that. And you'd probably sleep a lot better if you knew too. So I know what I think my value is. And that is like different things to, yes, I'm not getting videos that are getting 500,000 views and I'm not pulling 5K viewers on a stream, but I'm like safe business hands. And like, you know, you want someone to do a couple of good ad reads? I got you. I'll come do the ad reads. Like, you know, I'm like safe hands in business. And I think I prefer being that way. And you know, there's definitely always going to be that side of me that's like, oh yeah, what if Misfits don't want me anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Like, And, you know, so every now and again, I get the shivers a little bit, but you know, I'm confident in what I bring to an organization like that. And, you know, they're very open. We have a lot of very open conversations, and I always try and give them help in the back end of, you know, YouTube content creation and streaming, and, you know, long may it continue. I mean, I signed my second year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully another year, you know, at least, but they're good people. And, you know, I'm sure there's not many people who'd come on and trash the esports org that they are working for, but I get on so well with them. Like, I keep up with them outside of work. Like, I message them and how they're getting on, like, how's the missus, you know, like we get on as friends. And I think that's really important, because some orgs aren't like that, I would guess.
Yeah.
So having that really human side of it, where like we just chat and hang out and catch up. And when I go out there, like, you know, we'll do the work for the day, and, you know, most of them are 20, so they can't go out and have a drink. So like, we'll round up the staff who are like, oh, is anyone keen for like catch up, a beer? And, you know, we all go to a bar and hang out. And, you know, it's deeper than just working together, which is, I think you need that really to succeed in that like industry.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we mentioned at the start, was how we met, was you being friends with people, and we've come across each other at various different parties or events. I did have a question.
Yes.
You are the person who I see going to the most premieres, the most parties, the most events.
Yep.
The parties I get, that's where you're with friends with people.
Yeah.
How do you get into all these premieres?
Okay. So it's literally like, I think people think there's this like deep method to it. And it's just not the case. I mean, I'm quite a social guy in general. Like, I think there's this stigma to gamers where like everyone's really introverted and like, oh, they don't want to go and socialize. And like, I'm super extroverted. Like, I worked in sales before YouTube took off, and I was really shy as a teenager. And then I got a job selling phone contracts, and I realized like, I'm going to make no commission if I'm like a little shy guy. So I just sort of like, I can't say became charismatic, but like, I was just like, well, I'm just going to start trying to be better at conversation. And I then got better at conversation. And from that, like, sort of learned more about like body language and how people are responding to how you speak. And, you know, I think like, as far as it goes, I've got sort of like a friendly face. I'm always like a smiley guy. So, you know, people as a general are usually pretty happy to chat to someone who looks like they'd be happy to chat. It actually all started from, I Twitter DM'd Warner Brothers UK about 7 years ago saying, can I come to a premiere? They're like, yeah. Started there, and I got to go to a couple of things, and it was
what
like
was
much,
the first one you went to?
I'm trying to think about the first proper one. Actually, at the time, to be fair, I was signed to Maker, who'd just been bought by Disney.
Oh,
so
yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Technically, I had a couple through Disney. So my first ever one was Zootopia. And that was the first one where it was like, it wasn't a premiere, but it was like, they put on a whole event for it. We saw the movie early. They did the same thing with Finding Dory, I think it was. Big event, stuff like that. Try to think back to what my first actual premiere was. Because like, even when you see me at a lot of these things, a lot of them are just like screenings.
Yeah, so
like,
they're just early screenings.
We still
right?
throw the word premiere around, because like, it can be the UK premiere and they're just not making a deal out of it. And like, more and more I'm getting to go to actual carpet events. But like, what's the difference in me saying it's a premiere and me saying it's a early screening, other than, first of all, premiere sounds better. And it literally is that, like, but it's just a multimedia screening, you know?
A premiere is the first screening.
The first streaming of the movie in a country.
Okay.
So there's like multiple premieres. There'll be like an Italian premiere, a French premiere, a Spanish premiere. And then sometimes there are like, we were talking just before this, I'm going to the Dungeons and Dragons one. That's a world premiere. So like, that is the very first time it's going to be shown to the public. And like, they're taking over the whole of Leicester Square, loads of stuff about it. The cast are going to go, there'll be a red carpet. So even when I go to a lot of these screenings, they are like, they're early screenings, but you're just like, you know, oh, I'm off to a premiere. Because even explaining the difference of early screening versus premiere, like, I mean, look what it's just taken us to do, you know? It's like, premiere is a familiar word, and early screening, so I'd be like, oh, well, what's that? What does that mean? But it all just stemmed from me like asking. And then when I went to events, I would just be like, hey, like, I'd meet my contact from Warner Brothers, and I'd be like, oh, there are other people from Warner Brothers here. Like, I'd love to meet them. Oh, cool. Yeah. Come meet Roy, John and Daisy. I'm like, oh, cool. Blah, blah, blah. 2 months later, Daisy works at Universal. John's moved to Activision. and then you've got three contacts in three different places, and then you go to an event for them and you're like, oh, the other Universal people here, I'd love to meet them, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you just keep in touch. And I'm not doing it in a disingenuous way. Like, I enjoy the conversation and I enjoy meeting people. And then it just so happens that these people work in industries where, like, they'll send me to something and I can tweet about it or I can promote it. Or so
is that the deal then? You go along to the event and then in return you post about it?
So it depends what it is. Like, a lot of them have zero requirement, but I'm also very aware of, like, you know, you sort of get out what you put in, and the more effort I put into it, the more likely they're going to be like, oh, well, next one, he put loads of effort in, so let's bring him to that one. If I just keep going and I never do anything, eventually they'll be like, yeah, so stop inviting him. So, and then, like, there's some where there are requirements, like, not usually for premieres, but I did my first junket ever, where I got to go and, like, interview a cast. And it was a bizarre one because Universal flew me to Malta for 5 days to interview some of the cast and the director of Jurassic World Dominion. So bizarre, because the interview section was like an hour and a half of the second to last day. The other 4 days were like Malta appreciation stuff, where they took us and showed us all the cool stuff in Malta. Malta's like a massive film place, so like loads of films are filmed there. So we got to meet like the director of filming and stuff there, and he took us around all these spots where they made like Gladiator and Assassin's Creed, and, you know, super cool. But the actual work part of it was so small, and there was like, they literally said to me that, oh, it's a token of our appreciation of the work you do for us already. And I'm like, the appreciation is getting to go. I'm grateful that you let me go. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm also very grateful that you're giving me this unbelievable reward of meeting Bryce Dallas Howard. And I met Colin Trevorrow, who said he watched my Twitch stream to learn what Twitch was. And I'm like, that's the man who directed Jurassic World Dominion and many, many other very famous films. And he was like, what, did you just pop in while I was playing Minecraft one day? Like, just that's didn't
crazy.
See him in the chat, Colin Trev 12 or something. Like, you know, so it's bizarre. But the way I was, like, the way I sort of work on it now is, like, a closed mouth is never fed. And, mm-hmm. like, I ask for stuff all the time. Mm. Not in, like, a bad way, but in, like, I'd love to come to this. Can I? If not, that's great. But, like, I just wanted to ask. And, like, the proof of that, I mean, by the time this comes out, I'll probably have tweeted about it, so I'll talk about it. And if not, we'll get it out in the edit.
Okay, I'll tell you.
I just found out, like, about the BAFTA Game Awards was happening. Mm-hmm. And I was like, my manager was like, oh, that'd be a really great thing for you to go to. Like, loads of people in the games industry. Seems like right up your street. And I was like, oh, how can I get to go? So I literally went to, like, I was like, who do I know that does stuff with it? And I was like, well, Julia Hardy. Love Julia Hardy. And I was like, I'm so sorry to ask you something like this, but, like, do you know anyone I could talk to potentially go? Julia was like, here is my advice. Fired off a bunch of advice for me. And one of them was just message EE and see if you can go, because they give the only public award of the whole event. I Twitter DM'd EE and was like, they happen to follow me because I think whenever they do customer service stuff, they just follow the account.
Okay.
So, I mean, they follow like 370,000 people on Twitter. But I was like, oh, at least, like, it'll probably be seen. It would go to an actual inbox. So I was like, I'm a content creator, 1.5 million followers across like all socials. Would love to go to the BAFTA Game Awards. Is that something we can do? And I got the DM back about an hour before I came here, just being like, yep, we've got a space for you, a guest. We'd love to have you at the BAFTA Game Awards. Are you happy to tweet out a link to get people to vote for the award? And I'm like, yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't even like a, if you do this, you can come. It was like, you can come. Would you mind doing this as well? And I'm like, of course I will. It makes sense. It's also something I'm like passionate about. Like, games, films, TV, it's just like all the stuff I consume. And if I can work in those industries in any way, I will try and find a way into them.
Mm.
It doesn't hurt to ask. Like, my biggest advice to content creators and streamers is literally just like, create a little message, send out a polite ask if you want to do something. If you want to work on a game, send out, hey, I'm really interested in this game. Is there any chance I could stream it? I think people think that they're too small a creator to do that. But if you eliminate the part where brands have got to find streamers and you find the brand and just say, I'd love to stream it, I don't think that smaller streamers realize how valuable they are to brands. And just fire a friendly message over is my number one advice. Like, you can get to a lot of places. Like, right conversation with the right person and you can end up doing the most bizarre stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what I've done now is off the back of just messaging the right people at the right time. And then also, like you said, the more people you have connected to in that way, the more likely someone is to say, oh, this guy, talk to him.
Yeah.
One of the first big events I worked in esports was a Clash Royale event. I've never, there's some stuff here from, you know, this is a little Clash Royale barbarian.
Big Clash Royale guy in my time, you know?
And I'd never played the game before. And they interviewed me to commentate Clash Royale because they asked Shogun, who's a Rocket League commentator, and he was like, I don't want to do this. Don't care about the game. I don't know what his response was. I assume that's what his response was. he might care about the game. But he sort of said, oh, ask Gregan. He'll be probably all right at that kind of thing. And they contacted me, and it was literally just because they were looking for a, I think the branding was straight out of university British guy. And at the time I was at university and I did some Rocket League stuff, but it was my first paid big paid event was Clash Royale. And when I did the interview, I literally went out there while I was studying for my exams at uni. So I barely had a chance to research the game. I had to commentate the game having never played it before. So I had to make up the names of the things, just being like, I promise you, if I get this gig, I will learn everything about the game.
Yeah.
And for some reason they picked me, and then they, and again, it's literally just the right people, right time, right place.
Yeah.
I guess I got a question for you around all that, because what you just described is something I would call networking. And a lot of people don't like the term networking because it sounds transactional.
100%.
When a lot of the time what you're doing is literally just chatting to people and connecting, making friends.
Yep.
What's your thoughts on the word networking?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a word with a big stigma on it, because like the problem is in this industry, like you can't not network. Like even if you don't know you're doing it, like even like me coming to be on this podcast was from us randomly meeting, then having a conversation about having shared interests. And now you're like, oh, you'd be a good person to have on the podcast. Then when the podcast comes out, I'm going to tweet about the podcast. We haven't intentionally done this, but the whole of us meeting has ended up accidentally being transactional, in that we're on it. I'm here because we're friends and, you know, like it's a cool op to come and be on the podcast. But there is a transaction involved at the end of the day, even if it doesn't seem like there is. And I think that that's the problem, is like, there's definitely like very, very transactional networking. And if you know you're going to a place where you're like, oh, I'm gonna go there with this specific goal in mind. But also, I don't know how bad that is. Like in my head, I'm like, okay, let's say, you know, someone is like, they want to be a Valorant caster, right? So they're like, oh, I've got an invite to a Valorant event. If they go there and they purposefully seek out people who they think can help them get to their job, if they have genuine conversation and enjoy the time with those people anyway, like, yes, it's transactional, but it doesn't make it disingenuous either. It's a super fine line, because I guess like what I do and what I described is like sounds super transactional, but I don't go to these places thinking like, oh, I'm going to meet so many people who are going to be able to help me in my career. But then when I go and I'm there and I'm meeting people, like it just sort of ends up that they can. But at the same time, they still want me to do something for them or for it. And in that sense, it's very transactional. But I just don't know if it has to be as bad as it's made out to be. Really?
Yeah, I think the most challenging networking thing I've done recently is this, because my whole time in esports, in gaming stuff, I've networked. It's in particular in esports, there's a lot of events where they actually have networking time at them, where it's like coffee and networking. And in those situations, it feels very awkward. You've got people coming up like, oh, what do you do? And it's like, it's very different to when you're at an event where you're there doing something specific. You're literally at a networking event and it feels very awkward. But the whole time I've always felt like my method has been karma, you know, the whole idea, if I give loads, I'll get back. And you described that with, you know, I'll tweet out even if they don't ask, I'll make myself as valuable to them as possible by, you know, going above and beyond. And I've always felt like in my whole time in gaming and esports, I've always given more than I've got.
Yeah.
But then I've suddenly started this podcast where I'm very much getting stuff from people without giving a huge amount. And that's felt very hard for me, because I've been like, I have to ask someone to give me something without me being able to return anything. Yeah. So I've literally been begging everyone when they come along, let me buy you dinner, please. Let me, you know, let me treat you to something to give back. And realistically, that's not how it has to be. Sometimes you can just be like, come on. And you came along, you're like, no, don't buy me a drink. I'll have water. That's fine. Yeah. And I'm sitting here like, oh, I'm getting so much out of you without giving anything back. So how do you feel about that saying? Do you feel like you're a giver more than a getter?
Yeah, I think the key thing for me is like, I still genuinely stand by this. Like, I don't post about and I don't try and get involved in things I have no interest in, right? Like, if I end up promoting something or I end up working with a brand or I end up going to all these premieres, like, I turn down screenings if it's a film I don't think I'm going to like, because if I go and watch it and don't want to tweet anything about it, first of all, it just looks bad because I've just gone for the sake of it. But secondly, I'm like, I know I'm not going to be interested in that. And that doesn't mean my audience wouldn't be, but I'm just like, well, I'm not going to be able to be like, oh, I really loved this. Like, no one loves everything, you know? So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd say that I am definitely, I think people would see what I get to do and would probably assume that I get more than I give to situations. But I think it's just because I'm so active. Like, I mean, the joke I always make on stream is, first of all, that I'm the only streamer, which is great. And the second thing is, like, I always say that there is no one in this industry that's busier than I am. Might be true, might not be true, don't know.
You've described your next 3 days, and I could agree with that.
Yeah, right? So, like, and, you know, like, it does sort of come in waves. Like, there are weeks, sometimes months, where, like, I don't do anything, right? And, like, people don't see that part, and that's what, like, social media is. Like, I don't tweet if I'm, like, just sat inside all day, sick. Off to bed, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you only ever see the bits, and so you're always seeing the exciting side of the life.
Yeah, so you see the highlights. And, like, I think from that, like, my takeaway from, like, the getting and giving side of it is, like, I always make sure I try to add value to whatever I'm doing. So, like, and if that value is me being at a place, then, like, I will try and go to it. If that value is me tweeting something, like, I'll try and tweet it. Like, I'm about to go on a brand-related trip, which must remain unnamed. And I have no deliverables. Like, I'm going basically as someone else's plus one. And I'm going to post about the event because I'm going on this whole event, this whole trip. And, like, they're like, oh, yeah, no deliverables. And I'm like, I can put some Instagram stories out. Like, I'm going to be having fun. So I'm going to be there enjoying myself. I'm going to post some stuff. So, like, if I have to slap a couple of hashtags on it, like, I don't mind. Like, you know, it's one of those things. So I do try and find a balance, I guess, between giving and getting stuff. But I mean, if people keep offering me things, like, it's going to come across like I'm getting more than I'm giving. But I guess people wouldn't see what I give, like, behind the scenes either.
Mm-hmm. Like you said about the Misfits thing, I was actually interested when I saw your affiliation with Misfits and wondering what the relationship was there. And what you've described shows there's a lot more than just the hi, I'm with Misfits on the surface.
Yeah, because I'm definitely like, I am signed as a streamer. Like, I'm there as one of the streaming personalities. And, you know, there's like 6, 7, 8 of us somewhere in that region. And, but, you know, for me, again, that's what I'm talking about. It's like, how can I add value? And, like, I know my situation. I know I'm not bringing in massive numbers. I know I'm not at the peak of my career now. Like, I'm 30 and it's still my job. Like, I'm holding it down at the minute. Like, every day is a miracle. So, like, I always find ways, like, how can I add value? And, like, some of that is trying to guide some of the younger creators, and, you know, whether they'd agree is up to them. But, you know, I always try and keep them on the right path. And if morale's down, I'll try and bring us back up. Like, shoot days can be very long sometimes. And, you know, I'll always try and keep everybody chipper and, like, you know, once we've filmed, we get to go back, we can all hang out, chill out. So I always try and add value, and some of it is unseen by people. But, like, again, I'm hardly going to, like, tweet, like, oh, guys, just brought the morale up in a quiet room. Because, like, who cares? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not something I'm doing for my job. I'm doing it because I'm like, oh, this is what I think I should be doing.
Yeah, it's because this is something that's struggling quite a lot in the esports world, is a lot of very overpaid people offering very little.
Mm-hmm.
And I think being a competitive player is not the only value a pro player can give. You know, mm-hmm. professionalism, behind the scenes additions, you know, going to shoot days. I've worked with a lot of players where on shoot days, you can very clearly see they don't want to be there. Makes everyone uncomfortable. And yep. It makes everyone else, when that person needs something, be like, why would I bother? You didn't bother when I was giving you something.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely a bit of advice anyone in this weird niche of an industry we're in, the gaming and esports and content industry, trying to give more than you get.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it's unseen, I think that's a big part of it is, you know, it doesn't have to be something done really publicly to be something that can be, like, rewarding for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy when you start describing all these things, and it you know, when I had you here, I knew that the content side of you, but I hadn't seen all this side because obviously, like you said, it's not there. But it is quite a lot to learn from people in the industry who've been in it a long time, because there's a lot of Minecraft YouTubers now coming in. They're going to have that short-term burst of numbers, money, energy, excitement. And then when that's no longer there for them and the views aren't coming in, they've got to find something else. And I think there's going to be a lot of them, they're going to learn that the hard way.
Yeah, I think it's as with any industry, right? You get that initial buzz. And, you know, I've always said I've been very, you know, no matter how much hard work I've done, which like I have and I know I have, there's so much luck involved in both like content creation and the esports industry. Like without a doubt, like it's about being in the right place at the right time. It's about happening to have met the right people who are going to put in recommendations. And, you know, there's been 2-3 times in my career where I'm like, I'm going to have to go and get a job again. And like, I always said to myself, if that happened, I've had a good run. I had a good few years. I've got some great stories. You know, obviously if I can stay in this career for as long as I can, then brilliant. But you know, I do think I'd be gutted if it happened, but like, I'd be at peace with it. I'd have to just go and, you know, find work. But I like to think at this point now, like I could find work in the games industry somewhere, like, you know, whether it's in the behind the scenes of esports or, you know, something like that. But it is if you get a burst and then it goes down and you've got two choices, you're either going to like grind your life to be like, I never want to be in that situation again, or you're just going to take it on the chin and be like, you know what, we had a good run, I'll just go do something more regular.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess there was one question I was going to ask you before we end up here.
Yeah.
I do like to know the name origin. It's like a classic cliche.
Yes.
Esports and gaming world question. CPK, yeah. Quite obviously is your initials.
Yeah.
As soon as you see it's Callum Knight, you're like, what does the P stand for?
Yeah.
I wanted to guess it.
Okay.
Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Okay, we can do that. I'm gonna have to limit your guesses though.
Okay, one guess. There's a lot of P names out there as well.
There is, which doesn't make it easy on you.
No, I was gonna go with Phil.
No, although maybe that would, you know, that could sound pretty nice actually.
Because I feel also, like that's the one which people wouldn't guess as well, because it's a F sound rather than a P.
True. Oh, that, oh, you've really thought about that.
Yeah.
It's quite clever. Sadly, it is incorrect, and it's like a point of like almost meme on my channel now. I mean, there's a few people who know it.
Have you not told it anyway?
No, so it's like the last thing that I guess people don't really know about me is like what the P is, because like my life is like constantly online. Like if anything, I'm an oversharer. Like I don't mind when I'm like tweeting what I'm doing and like Instagramming where I am and what I'm eating and, you know, all that stuff. So I overshare. So like having that one thing that's kind of like, you know, it really is just a meme at this point. Like when I started out, there was definitely times when I like told people, and then like people would ask me, I'd be like, oh, I'm kind of going to keep it a secret. And I'm like, it's sort of stuck now. And I kind of like it being a secret. Because when everything is so online, to have that one thing that you're still like, ah, oh. I mean, it's just a middle name. It's not even a big deal. But like, you know, if anything, people usually keep their last name secret.
Yeah, a lot of people change their last name, don't they?
Whereas like my name's been out for years, like basically since I started. So like that is my only remaining piece of anonymity. So, I mean, maybe even if you guessed it, I wouldn't, you know, maybe it could be Phil.
Okay, well, you can pretend it's Phil. Now, I guess the last question about that was why C is in ocean and P is in urination and not C is in to look and P is in the green little fellas you have on your plate.
Yeah, you know what the worst thing is? Like there was no logic, and it actually wasn't the first name I settled on. I actually made a channel, didn't upload a video on it. I made a channel because like, that's a cool name, right? Made the name. I'll tell you what it is in a minute. And then I was like, I literally had finished making the channel. It was like, good, your channel's created. You can upload thumbnails. You had to like verify it and everything. And I was like, oh, CPK is cool though. I was just like, ah. So I deleted the other account straight away and then made CPK. And originally I was going to try and have the three letters. And then literally the first time I ever wrote it down, I was like, CPK. I was like, how can we spell that out phonetically? I was just like, S-E-A-P-W-E-K-Y. And I was like, huh? And it stuck. And the logic behind it was so funny too, because I was like, I had this weird feeling. So Minecraft content at the time, when I got my Minecraft character, the skin I have, I think there was a group, I think they were called the Magic Animal Club or something, right? And I think it was like Eyeballistic Squid and Stampy, right? And like their group. And they were all animal skins. There was almost no reference to them being animals, but I guess that's just what they were called. It was something like that. I'll probably get butchered for getting it wrong now. And I was like, oh, cool. Like animal skins are in. So I just got a fox skin when I was starting out. Same logic with my username. So at that time, three syllable usernames seemed to be popping off. So it was like PewDiePie, CNanners, like loads of channels were blowing up and they had three syllable names. And I was like, CPK. I was like, that's a guaranteed banger right there. And I absolutely don't think that's the reason I've ended up where I am, but I don't know how much it's helped. Maybe in that time I'd actually cracked the algorithm. And
I mean, I knew of you before I met you because I'd heard that name before. So yeah. It definitely is memorable.
I think it is. I think it's like, and also like the good thing is I think it sounds like a nickname. Like, You know, there are certain people who never want to be called their username. I mean, like, I don't call LD Shadow Lady LD Shadow Lady when I'm hanging out with her, but like she will call me CPK because I guess like, it's not long. It's quick. Like CPK and Callum are only like a syllable apart. So like there's almost no difference. So it's just like having a nickname. But yeah, there's definitely, you know, some people like, again, I call Ollie. I don't call him the Orion sound. Like there's certain people that have usernames that I think slide off the tongue like a nickname and other people who don't. And
I accidentally nailed that as well as a 13-year-old kid signing up to RuneScape. And then,
oh, what a time.
Yeah. So some people accidentally nailed them. Thankfully, we weren't like a XX underscore something or other.
Yeah. Oh, I've had my time. This was not what my Xbox gamer tag was. I was, first of all, that changed like every month anyway, because you could just change it for like 600 Microsoft points or something. Mm-hmm. So I would just constantly, like once a month, I just buy Microsoft points, change my name, do that message to all friends list of like name change. From this to this, which is the most ridiculous idea now that I think about it. But yeah, I had like a bunch of usernames. And then, yeah, it was when I started content creation that I settled on CPK, as I thought it was like a cool name. When I was playing Gears, I was predominantly Relinquish. That was what it was.
That's a pretty cool name.
Yeah.
Well, hard to spell though.
Yeah, and also long. So you couldn't really have like clan tags before it, which obviously was like a big thing in the olden like Xbox days was like, oh yeah, me and my boys are making a clan. And then you'd come up with some lame three-word name, like no more bullets, and you'd be called NMB for short. And you'd join a lobby and people are like, oh yo, I'm playing against a clan. They're gonna be so good. And we just were the same as everyone else, but we had a three-letter acronym at the start of the day.
Well, just before we finish up here, I was gonna you mentioned about the acronym thing. We had the founder of XL on here, Kieran.
Okay.
And he was saying when he chose XL, he saw Envy, the fact they could shorten their name of Envy to the letters N and V.
Yeah.
That was part of the reason why they liked XL, because it was shortening to an X and an L.
Yeah.
So you kind of got that with yours, that you can shorten it to a C, a P, and a K.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of a benefit of the name. You can shorthand it.
That is true. And only California Pizza Kitchen will get mad at me because they share. I'm sad because I have the three-letter username on TikTok. Of just three letters CPK. Instagram, I think they've got it. Twitter, I think it's someone called like Charles P. Kinsey III. It's just some guy who, and he actively tweets too. So like, I couldn't even get it if I wanted it. Because I own the trademark for my name in the UK. So like there is some liberty that comes with that. That if like someone, let's say a new website came out based in the UK and everyone wanted to get their usernames. If someone took at CPK, the full word, I can claim that username legally because I have the trademark, but I can't trademark CPK because it exists.
Mm-hmm.
So sadly, as much as I would love all the three-letter usernames,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Unless Cal Pizza Kitchen give it to me.
Well, thank you very much, CPK, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciated you coming. First time you couldn't come on because you had a dislocated jaw. I think very fair reason to not come on the podcast, but appreciate you taking some time out of your busy, especially the next 3 days, busy schedule to come on here and chat. Hopefully we'll get you back again at some point in the future,
because
you have so many stories.
That's it. I'll save them up.
I mean, all of the things you go to and all of the stories you have. We didn't even talk about one that we had off camera with you at the Valorant event. You know, so many stories.
Yeah, true.
But we do end with the same question everyone on here, and that is, what does gaming mean to you?
Oh goodness me. I mean, I guess like there's no other way to put it other than like pretty much everything, I suppose. I mean, not only was it like my favorite hobby, my favorite pastime growing up, my like safe space of, oh, stuff's bad, I'll just play games, like take your mind off it. But it literally became my entire career. My livelihood comes from video games. My being able to live where I live comes from video games. Being able to live the way I live comes from video games. Gaming is like, you know, without that, I would not have my job or what I'm doing now. And from that stems so many things. Like, I met all my friends through gaming. I met my girlfriend at Insomnia. Like, you know, everything I have in my life pretty much right now that is good stemmed from gaming in some way. So as cliche and lame as it is, I would say everything, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.